Okay. So good evening, my friends. We find ourselves on Chaf Dalet Amud Beis on 24B. Now, we are starting actually, I believe, all the way from the top. So we're at the top at the words Amar Mar. But while you might be flipping to Chaf Dalet Amud Beis 24B, I wanted to share just two things that I left out from last time. Not things from the Gemara, of course, we learned the Gemara, but also there were some supplementary ideas I wanted to share. So one observation was in the Gemara last time, we learned that even though some are not concerned, some are not chayish lemiyuta, some are not concerned for small possibilities of things going awry. When it comes to preparing the Kohen Gadol for his service on Yom Kippur, we make sure, according to some, to have a backup wife available should anything happen, because it says in the pasuk, "V'chi pir ba'ado va'ad beiso," so that it seems to be a requirement to have a wife. Otherwise, the kapara is deficient. This is interesting. Rav Elyashiv notes in his Ha'aros, Rav Elyashiv says that apparently, Tosos Yontif explains this Mishnah that having a wife is not ma'akev, it's not essential to the atonement being effective, but it's a mitzvah min ha-muvchar, it's just ideal. So that's odd because our Gemara last time said we go out of our way, let's just get the language, mala asu b'kapara. So we're going out of their way. Just for mitzvah min ha-muvchar, I guess you could say yes. I mean, it's Yom Kippur, so if there's ever a time to be machmir, probably kapara on Yom Kippur is probably the place to do it. But the Minchas Chinuch points out that there seems to be an incongruity that we would go out of our way for something that's not an essential requirement. So that was one thing that I left out last time. The other thing I wanted to share with you is from the Birchas Avram. The Birchas Avram says, now, also, we had a debate between, oh, was it Rabbi Huda? No, sorry. Was it Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon? No, not Rav Shimon. Rav Meir, I think it was Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. So whether we are chayesh lemisa, should we be concerned that someone could just die? So it's a whole long piece, but one little tidbit from there in the Birchas Avram, he says that obviously, not obviously, but evidently, it seems that we are not concerned for this idea that someone may just die the next day. It's interesting. Certain sources tug in different directions. For instance, I believe it's Perkei Avos that one is supposed to do vidui every day. That one should be doing tshuva every day because you never know when you're going to die. You can't just wait till the end of your life. You never know how long you're going to live, so you should keep doing tshuva every day. But what's interesting is
It's happened to me in the past.
what's interesting is when it comes to the mitzvah of Piri Rivia of reproducing. We actually give you until 18 years, until 20 years. If you're learning a lot, you could delay it even further. So one would think if you have to do mitzvos like it's your last day on earth, you should jump on that opportunity as soon as possible. So we have sources apparently tugging in the other opposite direction, telling us that you don't have to. Oh, you could prioritize other things, and you could plan to live another few years. So it's just interesting to see how different sources seem to be tugging in different directions on that. But as we say in rabbinic parlance, in kamakim laharich, we won't go down that rabbit hole right now. Okay, so again, for those joining us just now, we're on Chaf Dalet Beis 24B, all the way at the top. Okay, so now we're going to quote something that we brought up in passing. We mentioned that you can't use an animal as the walls of your sukkah. We, in passing, we mentioned one of the things that you can't use an animal for, in addition to not using it as walls for a sukkah, is you can't use it to write gittin on. You're not allowed to write your get on a live animal. Amar Mar, Mishnah Rav Yossi Aglili, Amru, Af in Kosel of Gitei Nashim. So we do not write Gitei Nashim. We don't write gittin on live animals. Obviously, you could, it's not like you can't do it on dead animals, otherwise, you can't use cloth. So it's on the live animals. My time of Yossi Aglili, what's his reasoning? So we're going to have a bit of a ping pong session here. You know what I mean when I say ping pong session? So for those who've been with us a little longer, it just means it's one of those instances where the rabbis start picking apart the psukim, saying, well, I use this word to tell me that. What do you use that word for? And then they keep ping ponging back and forth to see how everyone uses every little inference from the pasuk. So Amar Mar Mishur Yosei Aglili Amar Af Ein Kosel Kitei Nashim. So my time to Yosei Aglili. Why not? The Tanya Sefer. Ah, Sefer. So Ainli Ella Sefer. So Minayin. So because it's Sefer, that tells me it has to be in a book. But Minayin the Rabbos Kol Davar. How do I know that it doesn't have to be literally just a book, but I can write a get in different formats? Tama Lomar Ukasav La Mikol Makom. The words ukasav la, right? So the pasuk for writing is ukasav la sefer krisus. You shall write for her a book of severance. That's the, I think, the my most literal rendering I could give for the pasuk. You know, it's funny. We brought this up in our Thursday morning bazaar class. The Torah seems to assume that we already know about an institution called divorce. It says, in the event that a man chooses to divorce his wife, Kosovo Saver Croesus, you should go ahead and you should write her, here's how you go about divorcing. But it's interesting that the Torah presumes foreknowledge that we are already aware that there is an exit strategy called a divorce. So anyway, just a little...
How do we know this, Rabbi?
Sorry?
From where do we know this? From the Torah? Where in the Torah?
This
is... usually they just take another wife.
Dvarim,
why bother divorcing?
Dvarim Chaf Dalet Pasuk Gimel.
Wow. And
yep.
Then what is it in reference to?
All right, so I'll read you the
pasuk. I don't have it.
I'll read you the pasuk. It's the Torah or Hashalem. Ah, oh, my favorite. It's a, all right, so I've said this joke too many times, right? A collection. Oh, I already forgot my own jokes. Basically, the Torah or Hashalem collects all the psukim in the Gemara. So someone once put there, they said, you know, Perish Hashem al Hashas. God's commentary on the Gemara, which, get the joke because we really drive from the psukim to the Gemara. But if someone's just like Rabbeinu Tam and just learns the Gemara, so then you learn psukim by learning Gemara. Okay. So anyway, it says kigach ish isha uvala. So a man will take a woman and he will be intimate with her. He'll become a husband to her and they'll be intimate together. Vayim lo timsa chen beinav. She doesn't find favor in his eyes. He mazaba erbas davar because he found some, you know, they break down what that means, but some sort of impropriety. Ukasav la sefer krisus. He will write for her a book of severance, but Nasa Biyadav is Shilchami Beso, and he will give it to her in her hand, and he will send her from his house. Every single word and like letter and vowel in that pasuk is broken down, and we're going to see just a little bit of that right now. So back to the Gemara. So Ukasav la Mikol Makom. The words Ukasav sounds like, I don't care how you write it. Write it however you want, wherever you want, whenever you want. MK Matam Lomar Sefer. So lomar lecha ma sefer davar she'ein bo ruach chaim ve'ino ochel af kol davar she'ein bo ruach chaim ve'ino ochel. So the word sefer comes to be restrictive. It circumscribes the kasavla. Sefer tells me, whoa, 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 hold on there, Charlie. You can't just write a get on anything you want. So it has to be like a sefer. Now, you don't have to literally make a book out of a get. But what it means is, just as a sefer is something that doesn't have a spirit in it, it's inanimate, and it's not food, so too, anything that is not, you know, animate and not food, you essentially is fair game for writing gittin. That is the sheet of Rav Yossi, and you could see from there, animals are animate objects. They're alive. So therefore, you cannot write a get on animals. Rabbanan, so now the sages disagree with him, and they read the pasuk differently. Iksiv bas sefer. If it said bas sefer kidika amrit with a beis as a prefix, hashadachsiv sefer. Since it only said sefer without the beis prefix, lisfiras dvarim ba'almahu da'asa. It's just telling you that when you write the get, you're supposed to tell it over like it's a bit of a story of what happened, so to speak. You don't write their entire life story on the get, in case you're wondering. But meaning it's more of a sipur. It's more of a sipur. It has nothing to do with what material you could write a get on. Ah, Rabbana hai v'kasav my darshi base. And then what do the rabbis make of the word v'kasav? So ahumi v'ilahu, they infer from there, b'chsiva miskareshes v'ina miskareshes b'kesef, that you could only divorce with a document. You cannot divorce with money. Now, why would I ever think that you could divorce with money? Actually, it's a very reasonable half a mean. It's a very reasonable suggestion. Sakatait chamina, I would think to say, hol ve'iskish yitzila havaya Mahavaya bekesef, ayfi yitzia bekesef, kamash malan. So we have this idea of a yatzav ahaisa, that there is a connection of the laws of how someone enters a marriage and how someone leaves a marriage. So one would think, okay, ha'isha nignas b'shalosh rachim. So a woman can be acquired in three ways, kesef, shtar, and bia. So shtar is only one of the three ways that a kiddushin could be effectuated. Kesef is one of the others. I guess they didn't consider bia being one of the ways out. I guess for obvious reasons. But I don't know. Like, you give her some money, or I guess she would give you money. Maybe that's interesting in a havamina. You know, like, would you be giving her the money, or she would have to give you the money to get herself back? That's an interesting question that just occurred to me right now. I would not be surprised that someone. If it's addressed somewhere in the Rishonim or the Achronim, but in that Havamina, is the woman giving him money to get herself back to reverse the Kedushin? I'll just finish the point, and I'll take your question, Paul. So basically, at this point, I would think to say that money could be used to exit the marriage, just as it was used to enter, Kamash Malan. That's what this... that's what the word Vikasav comes in to tell us, that no, the only method you have for dissolving the marriage is Vikasav, is by writing, i.e. with a document, with a shtar, not with money. Paul.
I think it answered the question, but I would assume that the issue with, one of the issues with using money instead of a writing is, you know, this is a divorce. You got an issue of mamzerut. So if there's any doubt what the money was for,
interesting.
You can make an argument. Well, why was the money given? How do we know it was for a divorce? It could have been for some other purpose. A writing is clear.
Interesting, right? I think it carries kind of along that, you know, it's very clear on that document that it is a get. The money, I mean, I guess by the same logic, you know, when someone enters into a marriage, I guess that maybe the difference is that a marriage we usually conduct more publicly. A get is not always done, and it's generally not done in broad daylight. It's generally done as a more private matter. So, okay, yeah, that's an interesting suggestion, Paul. I definitely hear that. Yes, Toby.
Isn't there a provision for money on what if a marriage terminates in the ksuva?
Yeah, but that's more of an obligation that the man has to his ex-wife. It's not the method that's used to actually dissolve the marriage functionally. It's once the marriage dissolves, then he has to give her the money in the ksuba.
So maybe that's why it's not one of the methods for divorce, so that there shouldn't be confusion with
interesting.
What's in the ksuba. You shouldn't misinterpret why the money's given.
Interesting. You know, it's a funny thing because we could kind of try to attribute an impetus to this, at least just, you know, clearly from the Gemara itself, it seems to be just down to hermeneutics, to drashos, but it's always an interesting question. Was there some sort of impetus or guiding principle that pointed them in that direction to darshan the pasuk that way? We could always ask also about an esmachta, that, you know, this is operating on a biblical level, but sometimes the rabbis will kind of have an idea and then they'll find a pasuk to hang their hat on. That's called an esmachta. So very good point. But back to our ping pong session. Rav Yossi Haglili, so hi svar minole. So where does Rav Yossi Haglili, who agrees with this, that you could only use a get to exit a marriage? So where does he derive that from? So misafer krisis nafkala. He gets it from the words misafer, from safer krisis. How so? Safer kursa of an ain't over acher kursa. So that's to tell us that by putting the words together, safer creases, all it means to say only a safer can be, right? Kares, we talk about the punishment of kares is excision. Same word, like tearing, excision. So only a safer, only a get can tear the marriage. Nothing else can rend it. The Irach, so okay, great. So what do the sages who already have a source for this, what do they make of the fact it says Sefer Krisos? The Irach, they use it to teach the principle that when there is a get given, there can be no strings attached. It has to be a complete severance. Kedetanya, ha-re-zeg-i-teich am-nashol tishdi-yayin, v'am-nashol telchi le-beis-avicha lo-olam, ein-zeg Krisos. If the husband stipulates when he gives the get that she may never drink wine for the rest of her life, meaning on condition that you never drink wine for the rest of your life, or on condition that you never go to visit your father's home, that is not called a krisis, because when a get is given, they are supposed to separate. And here you're leaving strings attached now. However, if he says kol shloshim yom, all 30 days, ha'reis that krisis, then it is krisis because eventually it does terminate. That's what they use krisis for. And Rav Yossi v'idach mikares krisis nafka, because it didn't say sefer kares, it says sefer krisus. Why is it an extra fancy word, krisus? That detail is where he infers this principle that he reads the word krisus as an absolute krisus. And v'idach kares krisus lo darshe. And the Rabbana, what do they make of the fact is krisus not kares? They say that's just the word, nothing to make of it. That's usually how this ends, by the way. Usually at some point at the end of the ping pong match, when I'm just like, sorry, I don't really see the big deal here. I got nothing to make of it. That's just what the Torah says. You're reading too much into that one word. I see a bunch of questions. Paul, and then I see Judd. So Paul, Judd, anyone else want to line up in the queue? Okay, Paul.
So it says you can't have a contingent get, but I thought men can have a contingency. For example, this get is effective if I don't come back from travel or war or something like that.
Yeah, it's not that you can't make a stipulation. It's that once the get takes effect, they are completely severed from each other. So what he wants is that there should be a stipulation that lives even after the get is given. The stipulation you're referring to, which is a very good point, Paul. We learned this. You're referring to what we learned in the previous year, not too long ago, that a husband can stipulate, "I'm going on a long trip. I don't know if I'll make it back. I don't want you to be considered. I don't want you to be an aguna." So basically he'll make these kind of the stipulation that the get will take place after a certain amount of time if I don't come back. So, but once the get actually takes effect, that's it. It takes effect. Okay, and Judd?
And Paul's question was the same as mine.
Oh, good. And did we address it? Is
Yes,
it
yes.
good? Okay, very good. All righty. Congratulations. We're at a new Mishnah tonight. Exciting. And new Mishnah is not too new, to be honest, because as what happens many times, we make reference to these ideas in the Gemara already. Ha'osasu kaso bein ha'ilanos ha'ilanos tefanos la'ksheira. One who makes a sukkah, and it's among the trees, and the trees serve as the walls, it is kosher. What do I mean? I don't have my Masifta Gemara with me to show you a picture, but I trust we can figure this out together. Basically, the trees are the walls, but the schach does not, Rashi points out, the schach does not actually rest on the trees. There's something else holding up the schach. Now, why are we making this more complicated than it needs to be? Because, we'll talk about this. Because remember, we talked about previously that according to some, the schach should not be put on a maimed that is pasul, meaning whatever material is holding up the schach should also be kosher to serve as schach. But trees, even though they grow from the ground, since they're still attached to the ground, they're mechubar lekarka, they are not kosher schach. So that's why we throw in that extra detail. Again, though, you should be aware, we paskin me ikker hadin, meaning if you don't want to do anything with the bells and whistles, you want to keep strictly to the law, we paskin practically that you don't need to be concerned for the maimed. You could put it directly on metal, and you still have a kosher sukkah. Okay, so let's get into the Gemara. The Gemara basically is just going to present a principle, and then it's just going to give us a bunch of different brisas, which seems like the principle doesn't hold true. And then we say, nope, you just got to read the brisa with one little extra detail, and saves the day. You'll see what I mean. Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, kol mechitza sheino yechol lama baruch matsuya eina mechitza. Any mechitza that cannot withstand a standard wind is not an actual mechitza. So there's this, I forgot this fellow's name. He's basically like the father-in-law of some, I'm not going to say the name, someone who comes to the shul. Well, I guess what it means, father of the wife. But he's like this big Talmid Chacham who runs like a kollel in a country in Europe. I don't give too many identifying details. And whenever he comes to the shul, he always finds things that he thinks are not halachically okay. That's his fun game that he likes to play. And he comes over to me, and he speaks mostly Hebrew, and he comes over to me and starts complaining about this and that. So he came over Sukkot this past year, and he didn't like our sukkah. Now, I went on a tour of the sukkah. I think I told you before sukkahs, and I like, identified three different ways that it was puzzle. We should do that next year. We should do the next year's sukkah. It's like we should do a tour of the sukkah like beforehand and see. Oh, let's see what we could find, guys. I mean, hopefully it'll be nothing of note. But if there is, you know, it'll be a great class field trip. So anyway, he didn't like, and he made a good point. I saw this as well, that the tarp that we have was blowing in the wind, but we paskin that as long as it doesn't move back and forth more than three tfachim in any direction, what principle could we apply? Well, Toby, you said it, but you muted. I think I read it correctly though.
Lovud.
Very good. Exactly. Lovud. Because if it doesn't shift more than three tfachim in any direction, that's not meaningful enough, and it's still considered to be in the same place. As you can imagine, there are those who would suggest to be more machmer than that. But that's what we relied on, though. I was looking at it over Sukkot, and I was starting to get concerned that it was moving a little bit too far out of there. But I was trying not to look too closely because I had to depend on that Sukkot a few times myself. I'm like, ooh, do I make a bracha? Do I not make a bracha? Anyway, don't want to scare you guys. So back to our Sukkot is fully kosher.
Okay. But that was the wall that never had the tarp before. We always had just the cement part of the wall.
Here at the shul?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess before my time.
Yeah, we didn't always have a tarp going against the outside wall.
Okay. It's okay.
What do you mean? The wall of the shul is only one side.
I'm sorry, the actual building itself, that exterior wall.
Is one wall, but the rest of it was
never,
always
it was tarp. Never, I don't think it was ever covered with a tarp until last service.
Okay.
No, but you still had tarp for the other three walls, and they would move.
Oh, okay. But I thought the one that blew in the wind was the one that was on top of the exterior wall of the building.
You know what? We'll do a field trip this coming.
Okay.
So put it on the calendar.
Trip.
All right.
You know what date it has to be.
Yes, exactly. all right. So back to our feature presentation. So the Gemara asks, Tznan, ha'ozesukaso bin ha'ilanos, ha'ilanos tefanos lak sheira, but how is this principle true? Because in our Mishnah says you can use the trees as the walls. But don't the trees sway back and forth with the wind? So we're talking about firm trees, right? Think, I don't know names of trees, but I don't know, a cedar tree, or I don't know, something that's like a very firm tree. So that's what we answered. Ika nofo. Doesn't it have branches? Won't the branches still sway back and forth, the leaves and the branches? So the avale behutzav dafna. It's kind of like when we were talking about how can you use an animal for the walls. What's the solution whenever something might move around? You have to introduce one additional detail between the lines. Imagine that it is fastened and tied down with different branches. All right, you tied it all down. It's not moving anywhere, or it's not moving more than three tefachim. Tashima, and by the way, this is just going to be the same answer over and over again for every contradiction we bring up. Tashima, hayasham ilan ogeder o mechita sakanim nido mishum diyumid. So remember, there is something called pasi biros. You want to carry, take water out of a well on Shabbos, but you have issues of transferring. So, you know, you have kind of like, a block here, a block here, a block here, a block here. And you kind of like imagine, even though they are one big, each corner has a square, an amma by an amma, you could kind of imagine that it's hollowed out as if it's each one's making an L shape. So that way you have four corners that keep the, that creates its own rishus. So the question here is that you can use the tree or you could use these reeds and it's okay. Again, just have to stip. You have to add that little stipulation there that it's all tied down and fastened, and it's not moving anywhere. Good. Next, Tashima Ilan Hamesech Al Aretz. If a tree is like from a lashon of schach, it is providing shade over the earth. So imagine like a willow tree or something that's branches go either to the ground or it arcs at least within 3 tefachim of the ground, then you are allowed to carry in it. Because it basically, right, it creates its own Rishus Sayachid. So am I, Hakaz of Asi? Aren't the branches going to move around? They're also, you tied it down. All right. I don't know who's tying down willow trees, but if that's what makes it work, that's what we're going to stipulate. But if that's true, if it's really considered its own private domain that you can carry in it, we're going to see in a moment that for some reason there was a limitation on this. Why can you carry in it no matter how big it is? They gave a limit on, let's say you just have a super huge tree that there's a lot of airspace. It's a super willow. But there's a limit to how much you're allowed to carry, how far you can carry. Why is that true? If it's a real private domain, it's a real Rishus HaYachid, there shouldn't be a space limit, right? You could have a huge conference center and it's still considered Rishus HaYachid because it's all enclosed. So the answer is, interesting halacha, because really, the tree is meant to serve, the branches are really separating between the air and the ground. So there's some rule. I'm not super familiar with it, but it's an interesting halakhic tidbit that there's a limitation on that. Anyway, that's just a technical point. The point being is fundamentally, once you tie down the branches and they're not moving anywhere, that resolves our problem. It could withstand a ruach matsuya, a typical wind, and thus it constitutes a mechitza. And then one more of these, and they, you know, spoilers, it ends the same way again. Tashima, we have another question about whether withstanding a ruach matsuya, a standard wind, is essential. Shavas betel shugavoa asara. If you are find yourself on top of a big hill that is at least 10 tefachim tall, who may arba amos a beisasayim, it's between 4 amos and beisasayim, v'chein b'neka, which is a, I believe, a valley, shu amuk asara, who may arba amos a beisasayim, or a valley which has those same dimensions, v'chein kama kitsura shibos mi makifos osa, or you're in a field of standing grain, and just in the middle of the field, it's all plowed down, and then you have standing grain that is 10 tefachim around surrounding you. It forms a wall. Mahaych eskula v'chutzala alpayim ama. You can carry in it as much as you want, even, and then you could go beyond it. You have a tchum extending beyond it of 2,000 amos. Aval gav tekazos, even though these branches, and even though, standing grain, are wishing back and forth in the wind. What do we say there? Apparently, you have to add in another detail. Apparently, somehow, don't ask me how, you've made sure to tie down all of the standing wheat around you, and you've made yourself your own artificial wall out of that. The point being is, we've basically been able to contort ourselves to explain all these brisos with a little extra detail that any time that it's made out of material that seemingly moves in the wind, rest assured, we have to just add in that little detail that they're actually fastened and tied down and they're not moving in the wind. And that's why they constitute mechitzas according to Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. And that seems to be how we paskin that a sukkah, not just for sukkah, by the way, we saw Hilchos Shabbos and elsewhere, a mechitza, one of the qualities it has to reach a threshold of a wall is that it can withstand a typical wind and not be moving hither and thither or to and fro. Okay. And that brings us, my friends, to the next Mishnah. But we will have to leave that until next time. Achav Hei Amud Aleph. Any questions? Paul?
I'm sorry to monopolize. Is this the basis for mahadran straps on sukkahs?
I'm not familiar, only because I'm not a sukkah owner, but you're saying the straps are to tie down the...
No, they're like straps that go around the whole circumference of the bottom of the sukkah.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I mean, probably. It's interesting. I love whenever they market these things as mahadran stuff, you know? But, oh, it's a mahadran thing. So at least they're not telling you it's like you have to do it. You know, at least they're saying it's mahadran, you know? You don't think it's not kosher otherwise. But I would imagine, right, we had one of those canvas sukkahs and tying it down in place so it doesn't just go like this every time there's wind is essential to ensuring that it's kosher. So in some cases, it might not even be mahadrin. It might just be what we call mi'ikar hadin. It might just be essential. All right, my friends. Wonderful learning together and wishing you
Shabbos.
Thank you. Wishing you all a restful Shabbos.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shabbos.